David Hicks, we learn, was really surprised that he wrote The Magic Ticket, a children's book. He doesn't see himself as an author for young readers. And yet, what resulted when he worked along with his college students on an exercise he'd assigned was just that, a story for children based on early sadness in his own life when his young sister died and he was left to make sense of her passing on his own. David Hicks is Director of Creative Writing, Faculty of Practice at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre. He began his academic career as a professor of English, and since then he's published a number of short stories, and from them, a novel in stories titled White Plains. Dr. Hicks paid a visit to the WVIA Benko studio to talk about the book and its title. Books saved you, and the book that you've created is named The Magic Ticket, which refers to...
the library card, my library card. And I was, my parents didn't know what books I was getting. I would just come home with piles of books, and some of them were Sidney Sheldon kind of books, and some of them were scary, Amityville Horror, things like that. Others were kind of The Outsiders, or, I mean, this is when I was really little. I was reading children's books. I love children's books, cartoons, comics, but also just, you know, novels. And I loved it. And I tell my students now, if they say, well, can I write, a romance or something racy? I'm like, sure. I read them when I was a kid. You know, I read everything when I was a kid. A story is a story. And we all like different kinds of stories. So the Harrison Public Library in Harrison, New York was my sanctuary. I still get choked up thinking about that place because it was this magical place. And a very sweet librarian just doing her job is the one who told me that I could take books home because I didn't know I could take books home. I was just reading there like, this is amazing. There's so many books. And then one day, one of the librarians said, you know, you could take the book home. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? So I did. I did take a lot of books home. And that library card, I can still see it. I didn't think of that at the time as a magic ticket, but looking back, that was the ticket to my salvation, my sanctuary, my sense of who I am, because when I read really well. I had a great vocabulary. I aced all my spelling tests. And we had this reading system called SRS, I think they were. And when I was in first grade, I was reading at the fifth grade level. I was just reading everything. And it made me feel good about myself, even though in other aspects of my life, I did not feel good about myself. So it was a way for me to identify something that I was good at and felt good about. So it was the magic ticket.
David Hicks, speaking with us about his children's book, The Magic Ticket, in part one of a conversation we had here at the WVIA Benko studio this fall. Dr. Hicks contends that books saved him, as we just heard, saved him in his isolation as a child, and that he read everything, age-appropriate stories, and those for people thought to be more mature. We pick up with the second part of our discussion and his sense that removing books from library shelves and school curricula is misguided.
I don't believe in it. I know there are people who disagree, but I don't think one person in any community, or three or five, should decide what's safe or okay for kids to read. I didn't become any of the characters that I read, all the racy characters or sinister characters, evil characters. It didn't shape my personality. It just created a world in my mind, and it created empathy for others. It created tolerance for others. And maybe it's because I'm a middle child, but I think it's also because I'm a reader. I'm very empathetic. I can feel what other people are feeling, and I respect other people's stories. I don't judge other people because I don't know where they came from or what they're up to or what damaged them. I have no idea. So I'm not going to judge them. I'm just going to appreciate or ask for their story and appreciate it. And that's what books do. And to not encourage your kids to read, and I get how tempting the videos are and the TV is. I get it totally. As a parent, I get it. But to not encourage children to read anything, it seems to me a great wrong committed to society, because those kids grow up and they will be wonderful people. Young people are just beautiful all over. especially at Wilkes, but they won't have that kind of innate tolerance for other people's stories that happens when you read.
And so you have been interacting with young readers.
Yeah.
What has that been like then?
It's quite beautiful because I don't do story time readings at bookstores or libraries anymore because they're too young. The parents will bring the kids who are 2 or 3 or 4 years old, and they're not expecting some old guy to read a sad story. They really aren't. They want the kids to have fun and eat animal crackers and enjoy a reading. So that is not what I'm doing anymore. What I am doing, which has been just remarkable, has been to visit grief counseling camps and libraries with older kids, or schools now that school's in session, and reading to older kids or adults or retirement homes, like active adult centers, because they have stories to tell. They have stories they want to tell. They have memories they want to relive and recapture and write as stories. And for all these, whether they're kids or writers or adults or active adults, older adults, I want to teach them how to write how to do what I just did. And it's really simple. Just once upon a time, I was this kind of person and I used to do this. And then one day this happened, and that's plot. So it's character and setting, and then it's plot. And you can do this. We can do it right now. Let's try it with a few sentences. And then if we have more time, we can continue and write your story. It's the easiest thing to do, and it's the hardest thing to do at the same time, because you have to write about that thing you've been avoiding writing about when your life changed. And usually it's not happy. It can be. It can be, you know, then I fell in love. Like, then one day I fell in love. Good. It's an uptick. Most of these stories are, well, then someone died, or then something happened, and I haven't been able to write about this yet, but here goes. And if they do it, if kids do this, it doesn't produce the tears you think it produces. It produces this kind of pride that they've survived it, that they can tell that story. Sometimes it's too close. Sometimes it's too much. And it's too much to ask of them, because it's maybe just happened. But other times, some time has passed and they could see that they're okay and they could write about it. And I understand, because I tell them it took me decades to write this story. So it's okay if you can't write it right now, but you can draw it, or you can tell it to somebody and they'll write it. Something like that, for whatever the audience is. As an example, I went to the lands at Hillside Farms, which is wonderful. I know you've had Suzanne Capral on the show. I just can't say enough about what she's doing. Every week for 3 weeks, a different group of kids come to the Hillside Farms, and they learn how to treat the farm animals, and they learn about growing food. They play. They have guests come in. And I've come in and done a reading this book and talked to them and helped them to write their stories. Not all have wanted to, so they just color or something or listen, but some have done it. And these are kids who have maybe lost multiple family members. They've been placed in foster homes. Their lives have just completely been changed. You know, police have broken down the door. Bad things have happened. And they find themselves, you know, in a different home, different, their siblings have been separated. They just had a really hard time. And to be able to frame it in this kind of structure and to just start to tell their story is the most amazing thing. I can't think of a more valuable thing that I could do as a writer who's written a children's book, but to share the method or share my story with them. Which, I mean, nobody's measuring grief or difficulty, but my God, what they've been through is so much more difficult than what I was through. But we're all, you know, we're all hurting, right? We all have to tell that story. And the one thing that doesn't work is to say, well, no, you don't have to worry about that. Don't talk about that. Like, don't bother your mom or your foster mom with that. Like, don't, because, you know, they learn in many different ways. No one really has the attention span or the empathy to listen to what they've been through, because it's, some of them are horrific. But these are sweet kids. They're just, you know, normal kids. They're gorgeous, and they went through some pain, and when they tell their story, you feel at the end this kind of uplift, like, but now I'm playing basketball, or now I'm the safety for my football team, or now I'm an actor in a play in my high school. Like, you know, something like, okay, you look at you, you did it. Yes, you went through this difficult thing, but look what you're doing now. And it doesn't erase it. It just includes it as part of your story. It's as true as the tragedy you went through. It's still, you know, being in a play or being on a football team, it's something you could identify yourself with and be proud of, along with the stuff that happened to you that is going to form who you are and is already forming who you are.
Do they want to read them to you, what they've
written?
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Sometimes they don't, but usually they want to read them. A couple of them read them out loud. I have them stand on a chair and read them, and everybody else applauds, no matter how devastating, because they're like, yeah, yeah, your dad died, my mom died. Like, they're just everything. Everybody's in the room has something. So they don't blanch at anything surprising. They instead are very supportive, or they've already heard it. You know, they've already gotten to know each other. But they applaud. Most of the kids will very quietly think about it and maybe write a little bit at the end, or they'll read them to me one-on-one, or they'll read it to the counselor. Like at Hillside Farms, their counselors there, Emily, Bella, there's just a whole bunch of wonderful human beings. They are so patient and giving and so kind to those kids that even when they act up, because kids will act up no matter what, they're right there. And Suzanne's the head of it all, and Suzanne knows what she's doing and provides these kids with a safe space. So sometimes they'll whisper to a counselor, or the counselor will come over, or volunteer will come over and just look, read it quietly, and, you know, say, that's great. And the kids will either smile or cry a little bit or just feel very proud. And sometimes they'll read it to me. And then sometimes, you know, they'll come up and say, so you wrote this book? I'm like, yep, I wrote this book. I'm this little boy in the cover. And they can't match the old man self with the little boy self. So they say, well, can you sign it? I'm like, sure, of course I can sign it. You know, it's just this wonderful thing. And I say, you know, do you want to write a book? And they're like, yeah, oh yeah, I want to write a book. And it's about a space monster or whatever. Like, okay, go ahead, you know, write the book. You're not, just because of who you are or how you grew up, doesn't mean you can't be an author. You can't write a story, you know, and express your story to others in a sort of a public document. If I can encourage kids to pursue a little dream the way not too many people encouraged me when I was young, like nobody wanted to hear that I wanted to be a writer. I had to get a job, you know, I had to work. So if I could do that, then it's gratifying for me.
And there's a foundation that's involved, grief counseling. It's the Aluna Resource Center, which reinforces what you've done here, and how do they function in regard to the book?
Yeah, the Aluna Network is a center. There are Aluna grief camps all over America. This is the University of Pennsylvania. It's an incredible network of children's grief counseling centers and children's grief camps. The Lands at Hillside Farms isn't quite a grief counseling center. It's for any kid who has been in an upheaval through difficulty. The grief counseling centers of Luna are for those kids who have lost someone recently. It's usually a weekend in a pretty place. It's usually free. It's supported by foundations and grants and the university. And if anybody is in this situation, if anybody listening knows of a child who's been through any kind of devastating loss, find a camp near you. There are camps around in this area, or Lands at Hillside Farms, and sign them up, because it is an amazing experience that I never got to have because there were no camps back then. But to go to a place where there are like 30 kids who have all lost someone, who know how you feel, and then just to exist in that space, to play, you know, to make, in one camp in Colorado, they had these angel dolls. They made angel dolls of the person who's died. So, you know, they make a doll of their father with a baseball cap on, and they just carry the doll around with them the whole camp and talk to it or sit him down in a chair. And it's the most beautiful thing. And to have a place to go to where they encourage activities like that or creativity, they write letters to their lost ones, they do writing exercises, they just play and exist. It's an amazing thing for them. And I think everyone, I didn't know these places existed, but just to know that these places exist and to know that your child or a child you love can go there for a weekend and feel this kind of community in loss, but also in this kind of joy, or at least a kind of collective engagement with what just happened, instead of being quiet like I was, instead of not bothering anybody. It could really save their lives. It could really change their lives significantly, just a weekend or a week.
Having written The Magic Ticket now, you spoke about the writing that you've done up to now that was not for children, and that you were writing around the story that you hadn't told yet. Can you imagine now, having written The Magic Ticket, that what you write in the future, and you haven't written it yet, but having had this, if it's a release, but having had this story now out and having it serve others, do you suppose that your new writing might be impacted by that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, very much so. And it's interesting you said release, because I did not expect there to be a release, but there has been a release. I have even, I could say, a new relationship with my sister, if that makes sense, after having written this. I feel more of a kind of sense of joy toward her and more of a companionship toward her. It was all shrouded in loss and grief and, you know, mystery, because I didn't know what happened. But now that I've written about her and written about what happened and sort of followed through with it to what happened afterwards, I feel this sense of love. I just feel this kind of easy companionship where it's always been hard up to now. So I immediately went to, after this, when it came time to write something new, I immediately went to this book, my first novel that I never got published, because it's about a trip I made to Italy when I was a teenager, and I didn't know what I was missing because I was befriending my cousins who were same age as my sister, one cousin in particular. And I now realize in retrospect, I was missing my sister. I was looking for surrogates. And so I'm rewriting that novel in more of a memoir kind of voice instead of a novel. And it starts off with this kind of ode in a way to my sister, and then it gets into all the activity in Italy, but it keeps returning back to my memory of my sister, or the missing underground presence of my sister. So it has changed my writing almost immediately.
You said you might be willing to read for us.
I'd be happy to read it. The Magic Ticket. Once upon a time, there was a boy, a happy, happy boy. He was the kind of boy who laughed when a leaf landed on his head, or if his feet smelled sour when he sniffed them, or when his mother dried his hair after his bath, or when his father tossed him onto the bed. One day, the boy's parents came home with a baby. "You have a sister," they said. The boy loved having his sister in his room. He tickled her tiny toes in the crib. When she was asleep, he kept very quiet. When she was awake, he read his book to her. "You are such a good big brother," his mother said. Then one morning, his sister was not in her crib. His mother was on the couch. His father was in the chair. They were very sad. Where was his sister? The boy's father gave him a hug. "Your sister died," he said. The boy was confused. He went back to his room. He tried to read his book, but it was different without a sister to read it to. In the fall, the boy went to school. In his classroom, there were many, many books. One was about boys who take a train into the city. One was about a girl who has tea with a rabbit. One was about a brother, a sister, and a magic treehouse. The boy read all the books. At home that summer, he looked for more books to read. His father walked him down the street. "There are more books in there," he said. Inside, the boy found big, colorful books. He sat on a giant pillow and read them. In another room, he found smaller books with longer words. A nice woman tapped him on the shoulder. "That's a chapter book," she said. "Can you read it?" The boy nodded. The nice woman smiled. "Would you like to take it home?" The boy pushed up his glasses. He could take a book home? The nice woman took the boy's hand and led him to a big desk. "What's your name, young man? Where do you live?" The boy told her his name. He told her where he lived. She took his picture. The nice woman handed him a library card. "This is the magic ticket," she said. "With this, you can take home as many books as you want." The next time the boy went to the library, he brought his red wagon. He put 10 books into the wagon. He gave the nice woman his magic ticket. She put an extra book in his wagon. "This one is from me," she said. Back home, he carried the books past his mother on the couch. He went upstairs and set the books down on the floor of his room. One was about a giant shark. One was about a boy who lived in the jungle. One was about a haunted house. But first, he read the book the nice woman had given him. Afterward, he felt sad, but less alone. All summer long, the boy read to his sister. He read to her on the floor of his room. He read to her from the tree growing out of the sidewalk. He read to her on the front stoop. He read to her empty crib. One day, he read a book to his parents. His mother sat up on the couch. His father shut off the TV. The boy read this book to his parents every day. When the story ended, his parents were crying. "Thank you, son," his father said. "We love you so much," his mother said. Later, the boy went back to his room. Someday, he thought, "I will write a story about my sister." He imagined how his book would begin. "Once upon a time, there was a boy, a happy, happy boy." The end.
Thank you so much, David. And it is really what we've been talking about, the book as gift, books as gifts, the librarian giving the boy the book, and the boy reading to his parents, right?
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? To read someone a story, or to give someone a book, or to show someone your own story, it's just a gorgeous thing. Yeah.
You say you do still read to certain groups, and if someone's interested, how can they approach you to see if it's a good fit?
They could write to me at Wilkes University at david.hicks@wilkes.edu, or to buy the book, they can go to fulcrumbooks.com or my website, which is david-hicks.com. And yeah, I'd be happy to come to schools, to give this workshop, to do readings, retirement homes, grief counseling camps, libraries. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
And the publisher must be special.
Yeah, the publisher of Fulcrum Books, they do books that they hope will incite change or to have a sense of purpose in the world, you know what I mean? To give voice to the voiceless and to change the dynamic of book publishing a little bit. I've been very, very happy with them. They're a small press in Colorado, but they are very supportive to me in a way that most small presses can't be. They just don't have the money. The book is beautiful. I mean, it's just, the production was just gorgeous, and I'm very happy with working with them.
Author David Hicks, Director of Creative Writing, Faculty of Practice at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, speaking about his book, The Magic Ticket, a children's book, illustrated by Kateri Kramer and issued by Fulcrum Books. For more information, on the web, david-hicks.com, david-hicks.com, or fulcrumbooks.com. The Magic Ticket by Dr. David Hicks, who is a writer and has a number of stories to his credit and a novel in stories titled White Plains, with more to come. David-hicks.com or fulcrumbooks.com. And in the first part of our conversation about The Magic Ticket, he was very, very sincere in his praise for the illustrator, Kateri Kramer from Colorado.